With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Everyone, welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Good weekend, guys.
Absolutely. Good morning. Good to see you.
Nice to see you. A lot of football taken in this weekend.
A lot of football. Ha.
We have a big Monday show for you. The Cowboys might be better than we thought. It looks like the Warriors will never lose another NBA championship, and the Browns have the receiver. Although it might not be exactly who you think it is. That's where we start this morning. Not with a Dez Bryant signing, but with all-pro wide receiver Josh Gordon returning to the Cleveland Browns after working on his mental and his physical health. Browns head coach Hugh Jackson is hopeful that Gordon could be on the field as early as week one when the Cleveland Browns take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Gordon still has to pass additional steps in the league's substance abuse program before he sees any action. Chris Carter, what do you make of Josh Gordon's return to the Browns?
Well, first, I'm very excited. Every day that he was gone from camp, I had concern over what his, not only his mental and his physical health, but also what his football future. I mean, he's to the point where any little slip up could finish his football career. So I knew it was a critical situation for him. I like the fact that he did reach out to the team and to the NFL to say he did need some help. I'm still concerned about that, but I do feel better that he is back with the team. We talked about maybe a little over a week ago, and Nick, I think you asked me the question, at this point in their career, Josh Gordon and Dez Bryant, who would you prefer to have? And I would prefer to have Josh Gordon because of the fact of his ability to be able to run. And then now since they have Jarvis Landry brought him over and he's more of the possession receiver, I definitely need someone like Josh Gordon. So I'm excited that the Browns have not given up on him. I'm excited that the NFL, that they might have intervened to be able to get some clarity on this case, because this is not the normal, a person inside the drug program taking away time before they go to training camp. I haven't seen this Josh scenario
because it hadn't happened before. And that's something the NFL deserves credit for on this front, because the NFL, in my opinion, in years past had been far too black and white and far too authoritarian at times when it comes to street drug violations. Listen, you have this many failed tests, you miss four games, this many failed tests, you miss the season, and indefinitely suspended. And I don't want to sit here, I'm not saying Josh failed a test, but once you are at this point in the substance abuse program, any misstep, a missed test, not only a failed test, a lot of things can get it to where, okay, we'll talk to you in a year. And I think the NFL quietly, because they haven't publicly said this, but the only logical conclusion you can draw from all the evidence we have is the Browns, Josh, and the NFL came together in order to give Josh the best chance to get back on a football field. And it looks like now he's going to be back on a football field without being suspended again, which is critical because, as C mentioned, I mean, he hadn't played a full season since 2013. In 2014, he was injured, and he played part of the season, out 15 and 16, only played a half dozen games last year. If he then had another year suspension, his football career is over. So on the personal standpoint, on the human standpoint, I'm happy for Josh Gordon. On the football standpoint, you now look at the Browns, just at the wide receiving core for a moment, and it's the basketball team you're always talking about. Njoku can be their center as the big tight end. Josh Gordon, people don't, I don't know if they know this, he's 6'3". He can be their, he's fast, but he's also a big guy. He can be their power forward. You mentioned Jarvis Landry is their possession guy. And then Antonio Callaway is an interesting slot option, kind of as a point guard to continue the analogy. Like, you look at the Browns pass catchers, and every box is checked without having to add Dez Bryant, assuming that Josh Gordon continue now that he's back, that he stays there.
Josh Gordon missed a lot of time. So for people mm-hmm. that haven't been following closely to where he was when he first came out and how he played, how good can Josh Gordon be? Because you answered very quickly that he's a better option for the Browns than Dez Bryant. Tell people why.
Yeah, I still think he's a 1,000-yard receiver. He still has very unique size-speed combination. We've seen in the highlight of his – the highlight season was 2013 season. He does stuff like that we hadn't seen a big guy do since Randy Moss. Now, he's bigger than Randy Moss from a size bulk standpoint, not necessarily as fast on the deep ball, but his route combination, his ability to be able to make the big play. I mean, he runs beautiful routes, catches the balls with his hands. I mean, he has, I would say, I haven't seen 10 wide receivers in the last 20 years have more talent than Josh Gordon. Not 10.
No. Oh.
Not 10.
He had a stretch in, Jenna, he had a stretch in 2013 where in a month, in four games of football, with keep in mind who's playing quarterback for the Browns, well, yes. at any point in the last 30 years, but in four games, he had 770 receiving yards. In four games. Like, I mean, he had, I think in that stretch, I think he had five touchdowns. By the way, that's the only reason that the Browns or any team would have been this patient. Like, every player that gets kicked out of the league wants to be reinstated, but even if they get reinstated, there's not usually many teams that are like, okay, you haven't played in 2 years. Like, we don't know if you're going to be able to stay clean. But his talent, he hadn't played a football game in a couple years, and last year's first game back, he had 85 yards. 85 yards receiving again. Who was playing quarterback for the Browns? It's like DeShone Kizer, Cody Kessler, and company. No. The talent's undeniable.
Yeah, and I could see the Browns winning six games this year. Because if you look at, you talk about the basketball team as far as the wide receiver and their tight end, let's include their quarterbacks. Tyrod, since we found out from last week, that's his name compared to Tyrod, which we've all been calling him. Baker Mayfield, and then the running backs. They got Duke Johnson and Carlos Hyde. I mean, Carlos Hyde is an underrated player. Their offensive line. I'm going to stay with the same thing. Their offensive line is underrated. Their defense, I believe, is going to be pretty good. It's underrated. So I believe the Browns have improved as much as any team. Well, they've won one game in the last 2 years. But from a skilled standpoint, that's why I believe also that Tyrod will be the quarterback. Because when you have that many skilled guys, it's important to be able to get these guys the football. And that's why I believe he'll be able to hold off Baker because of the playmakers on the outside. Browns and Browns fans, they should be excited. Because this morning, they woke up and they are a better football team that Josh is back with the club.
And you can go, I'll go a step further on each position group. You mentioned Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson. There's the guy they drafted at the top of the second round, Nick Chubb. They have three, I believe, quality running backs. David Njoku is a guy who's had a problem with drops, but we saw how talented he was in college. There's a reason he was a first-round pick. And I already mentioned the wide receivers, but how much better is everyone on the team going to look when you go from the worst quarterback situation in the NFL to Tyrod Taylor, who, as maligned as he was in Buffalo, there aren't 20 people alive that play the position better than him. There might not be 15. So we have talked about what a terrible position bad or inexperienced or inaccurate quarterbacks put you in. How much better are these guys going to be when they know the quarterback more likely than not is going to put the ball where it needs to be, as opposed to DeShone Kizer, who wasn't ready, or whomever else they were running out there last year? Like, I might have more questions about the defense than Chris does, but offensively, you look at the Browns and say, very good wide receiving group, quality running back room, high potential tight end, and stability at quarterback, at least until they go to the rookie Baker Mayfield.
No, there's a lot of potential, but I do want to sort of close out the segment where we started with Josh Gordon. Does it concern you at all that during the preseason he had to take some time away to get himself back going again? That was during the preseason before the pressures and all of it and the limelight and everything kind of falls upon him here with the regular season right out of the corner, especially if Hugh Jackson is saying there's a chance he could start week one.
No, I expect him to be out there week number one, but all the guys that are in the drug program, I got a great deal of concern for. There's a reason why they've been there. And now he's decided to take some time off, even if it wasn't to deal with the substance or drinking, which I do believe it had to do with one or either of those. I don't believe it was just anxiety. I believe it was something involved, not necessarily what he's been involved of in the past, but
I believe you could listen, they
don't test you. It's not like you're on probation with the law where they test you for alcohol, as they do for some. The NFL drug program, they're not testing you for, you don't violate if you've been drinking typically, but a lot of guys, if they drink, that is the next step to using drugs. And so that, I'm not reporting this, but my educated guess would be that he saw himself, where the team saw himself,
going down a path, and said, whoa.
And by the way, good for him.
Sure.
Like, good for him, good for them, because that's the types of things these guys, that people need support on. But then there was also a report this week that he's got a child support court case hanging over his head where, I am not justifying anybody not taking care of their kids at all. Not unpaid child support's a huge problem in this country. We do have an odd situation with pro football players because you look at their annual salary and he doesn't start getting paid till September. And I don't know that the court system, they decree this in June, and it sounds like his representation says, well, you're basing it off his $800,000 salary. He doesn't get a dollar of that until September. But so he has a lot of stresses and pressures on him right now. So I think it'd be very warranted to continue to be concerned. But as long as he's out there, you said one of the, as far as skill set, I think he instantly is one of the 10 best receivers in the league. Like, every time I've seen him play football, he's been that. The question is, can he play football? Can he be?
Can he stay on the field?
Absolutely.
Exactly, for the Cleveland Browns. We'll talk about this a lot more. Eric Mangini will be with us to discuss. But coming up, hey, why might Dak Prescott not have to be lights out for the Cowboys to win the NFC East this year? The answer, when First Things First rolls on. All right, on to the Cowboys and Bengals, but really just Cowboys. Cowboys offense, Dak Prescott, 10 for 15, 86 yards and a touchdown in his three possessions Saturday. Cowboys defense, shut out Cincinnati in the first half. The only dose of bad news, though, all pro guard Zach Martin had to leave the game with a knee injury, but according to reports, he avoided significant damage, which is great to hear. Back to the defense, though. CeCe, how good does Dallas need their defense to be if they're going to compete this season?
Let's put a number on it. I think in the top 10. And also, in doing that, I think if they can be in the top 10, they can be in the top 10 as far as turnovers. I believe that will help that offense. They're going to be able to run the football. And that we know because all the resource they spent on that offensive line. But I believe their defense is underrated. They've done a tremendous job as far as the draft. Very, very athletic, have the ability to be able to get after the quarterback. They're going to be getting David Irvin back after a four-game suspension. So they have at least four quality pass rushers. I believe that their linebacking core, especially Jalen Smith, I believe he's a really special player playing next to Sean Lee. And their secondary with younger players, I believe, is an underrated secondary. So I believe they're going to have a good defense. I was shocked about their defense last year, and I believe that they're going to be able to build on that, especially with the running game. And that defense is probably only going to have to play 8.5 minutes a game.
All right, so a bunch of stuff to build off there. One is Jalen Smith. If you're like, where do I know that name? He was going to be a top 5 pick. And do you know how good you have to be not a pass rusher necessarily, but an inside linebacker and to be a top 5 pick? That's what his profile was when he took the field in his final college football game, the Fiesta Bowl, I believe it was, for Notre Dame. He suffered a devastating injury that led to drop foot, which is still a situation I don't totally understand, but I know it was enough to where he fell from being a top 5 pick to a second round pick. Man, if you watched him this weekend, he looked fast again.
Yeah, last year he played with a brace inside of his shoe that we hadn't seen a skilled player play with. We've seen some bigger players play with in the NFL. So his comeback was a tremendous story. Now he's removed the brace because he almost has 100% feeling in that knee and the foot, and you could see the elite speed and the reason why he was coveted coming out of college.
So you've got he and Sean Lee in your linebacking corps. I'm going to mention another guy, Taco Charlton, a guy they drafted in the first round last year that they expect more from this year. We know they franchise-tagged DeMarcus Lawrence coming off a 14-sack season.
Yes.
David Irving, who, like you said, is going to miss a month. He had seven sacks last year. Tyrone Crawford had, I think, around half a dozen sacks last year, another defensive end. All of a sudden, you see their front seven, you say, all right, so as long as Sean Lee's healthy, that could be a really good front seven. And even when Sean Lee's not there, they could have enough people. C mentions the secondary. Everybody, I think, saw the unbelievable interception Chidobe Awuzie made this weekend. But I think they did something interesting. We sometimes hear about guys who aren't great athletes transitioning from corner to safety. The Cowboys did something the opposite with, I think, former first-round pick Byron Jones, or at least top two-round pick Byron Jones. He was a safety. They're now transitioning him to corner.
Yes.
Because he, one of the reasons they can do that is he's such a great athlete. If you know his name, it's because he set, like, the world record, essentially, for the broad jump at the combine. So you look at their defense, and you say, okay, that's a lot of homegrown talent. It's a lot of high draft picks. There are also guys on there like David Irving and Jalen Smith who, for different reasons, Irving drug-related, Randy Gregory's another one, by the way,
yes,
who drug-related where fell in the draft. Jalen, injury-related, fell in the draft, but they were highly ranked prospects if you remove the off-the-field either drug or injury issues. And you say there's a lot of talent on that defense, too.
Is the defense good enough, though, that maybe you don't have to concern yourself so much with the one thing that we've been talking about the last couple weeks, which is the lack of a receiving core that this team has? I mean, can you really, can that defense drive you that, plus maybe Dak and Zeke?
Well, this is the thing we've seen in even NFL history and recent NFL history, is that if you have a good defense, you don't necessarily need a shower all the time, Jenna. You can, it's a little
Hold
deodorant.
On, you'll get there. Okay.
It's a deodorant, okay, that because they eat up so much time. All right, if they can create turnovers, they can get those extra possessions for the offense. So we have seen great defensive teams before, that being Seattle before Doug Baldwin and all those guys emerged. They got upset with me because I didn't think that they were
pedestrian.
Yeah, so, but in the process, they weren't a great wide receiving core. But the defense, the running game, Russell Wilson held everything together. Baltimore, for years, they didn't have a whole bunch of explosive players on the offensive end because they've been dominated by defense. So defensive-oriented teams, they can do stuff like that. They don't have to be as explosive. Look at New England, how they originally built their resume at the beginning of Tom Brady. Good defense, run the ball, don't turn the ball over. That's a recipe typically for winning a good 10 games. So if you say, okay, my receiving core is not going to be great, what else do I need? I wouldn't say a running game. I would say a great defense.
And I don't think, and I don't think C believes, that this defense is going to be that Ravens defense or this even the Seahawks defense. That's to the extreme. But that Ravens team and that Seahawks team didn't have Zeke, and they didn't have this offensive line.
Right.
Like, this is one of the reasons why I think, and I understand why we have focused so much on the Cowboys receivers, because it's a big year for Dak. They used to have Dez. They used to have Witten. It's a big change. But when we're just going, like, group by group on the Cowboys, overall defense, this was has either been a top 10 scoring or yardage defense each of the last 2 years. Like you said, it was surprisingly good last year. Overall defense, they feel to me like a BB+. Running game, they're an AA+. Offensive line, they're an A+. So the only part of the team that, to me, is a concern is the passing game. Now, that's an enormous part of the game in today's NFL, but that's That is something that you're unable to overcome if you've got a bad defense. You're unable to overcome it if you also don't have a running game. They check all the boxes except for that one.
And one thing that they do have, and they get a lot like the L.A. Rams get with Wade Phillips, they get tremendous experience with Rod Marinelli and his ability to deal with a lot of different personalities. Because you talk about all those things, suspensions, different guys being in there. Rod Marinelli, man, he can coach up some football, and they like those projects. Rod Marinelli, and you got to give Jerry Jones credit because he doesn't give up on people. Jalen Smith spent that high draft pick on him and all those guys.
Randy Gregory missed a year.
They wouldn't be on the field without Jerry Jones. And I personally know that, how involved Jerry is in their day-to-day lives.
All right, we got to take a break there. Coming up, which Panthers taking a lot of pressure off of Cam Newton? And next on First Things First. Because you know I'll never get there. Time for some stories to start your morning. The league is handing out 15-yard penalties this season to players for lowering their head and making contact with opponents. It's called the new helmet rule. Some of the calls made on the field left players and fans confused. All right, Cece, what is your reaction to the new rule, how it's being implemented, and maybe what is the new rule?
My reaction, Jenna, is I don't like it, but this is what. I love football more than I hate this. And if I want to keep watching football, I'm going to have to adjust, because this is the way we have to try to train football players to remove their head from the collisions. I know it's hard on the referees. I know it's hard to watch. I was upset this weekend. But if I want this game to stay as popular as it is, I'd better get used to guys tackling without their head being involved, Nick.
Here's the reason that I'm not yet going to overreact to this. I think much – do you remember the year they changed the illegal contact rules in reaction to Seattle just mugging everybody?
Yes.
That preseason, that was called seemingly every 15 minutes. Illegal contact.
Yes.
And then in the regular season, they pared it back down. I've got to think in the preseason, they are calling this to the extreme, and we won't see it nearly as much in the regular season. But I do know for fans that don't watch the preseason, that just check in, to come back during the regular season, they're going to be like, wait, that hit right there is a foul on the defense? It's going to be confusing.
All right, moving on. Adrian Peterson isn't ready to hang up his cleats just yet. The seven-time Pro Bowler is meeting with Washington today in hopes of extending his career to a 12th season. Peterson had just 529 yards on less than 3.5 yards per carry last season with the Saints and Cardinals. CC, can AP still contribute in the NFL?
It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult because his running style, first and second down runner, you know that you're not going to throw the ball out of the backfield. We only see a few runners like this that are limited. Leonard Fournette, he's a guy in Jacksonville right now. Adrian's had a great career. But as we saw last year, you asked this question last year. I was like, yeah, Jenna, he's got football left. And Nick looked right at me and said, no.
And then James Harrison
So you guys made me look bad because making Nick look like he's smarter than me on the football. So I'm with Nick right on this one.
Yeah, listen, the only reason you would bring Adrian Peterson in, aside from the fact that it's a Daniel Snyder type of thing, like, oh, a guy who used to be great, we'd love to have him in Washington, is if you remember what Alvin Kamara told us about Peterson being a good, believe it or not, mentor in the locker room for the younger running backs. If you want him in that regard, and I know they lost Darius Geis, so you feel like there's a need, but I mean, I think if he plays, I'd set the over-under total rushing yards from like 200. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer to me, but he doesn't have anything left at this point, I think is fair to say.
All right, finally, some bad news for Tom Brady and the Patriots. Rookie offensive lineman Isaiah Wynn will miss the entire season with a torn Achilles. The first-round pick out of Georgia was supposed to help fill the void left by left tackle Nate Solder's departure. Best laid plans. CeCe, how big of a blow is this to Brady and the Pats?
Man, this is a huge blow because not only is he going to be a very good player, but you're talking about need. When you go through free agency, because that's before the draft, they know they're going to lose Nate Solder. Okay, no problem. We don't plan on paying the type of price that the Giants and other teams were willing to do. We're going to utilize the draft to be able to replace him. Now he's gone. And all those other players in free agency, I mean, Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach, he's going to earn his money this year.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the overall versatility. Like, this is going to hurt their passing game because do they have to play more two tight end sets, Nick, which we talked about a lot last week, which I believe that they will. I mean, you thought Tom Brady threw the ball quick before. I mean, this year he is trying to get that ball out of his hand in 2.1 second. Like, because with this offensive line and not knowing who's going to be in front of him? Now, who's going to play right tackle? We didn't know who was going to play left tackle. This is going to be a problem for New England.
And if you look at it from 30,000 feet, they lost their number one receiver, Brandon Cooks, for nothing this year. Because they traded Cooks away for the pick that became Isaiah Wynn. Now, they hope long-term they will have get those.
Right.
But for the 2018 season, you have outgoing your number one receiver, Brandon Cooks, and incoming, nothing. You also remember, they lost their swing tackle, Cam Fleming. He went to Dallas. Nate Solder, we know, signed with the Giants. So right now, their starting right tackle is Marcus Cannon, who I actually think is a fine player. And their left tackle is Trent Brown. How'd they get Trent Brown? Well, they traded down 50 spots in the third, fourth round with San Francisco. Like, this is what Trent Brown was worth to San Francisco. The Patriots traded away the 95th pick, and San Francisco gave away Trent Brown and the 143rd pick. So it's not the 95th pick for him. It's 50 spots in the draft. Like,
right.
That's their starting left tackle right now. It ain't great, as one would say, and of all the rookie first-round picks that you thought were going to make an impact this year, he's the most notable one to come to mind of any team to be lost for the season already. And We went into the draft saying we thought the Pats were definitely going to get a tackle, and we thought they were definitely going to get a backup quarterback. They punted on the backup quarterback, fine, as long as Brady's healthy. And now, effectively, they punted on the tackle with their highest pick. Like, this wasn't the 31st pick, wasn't second-round pick, 23rd pick. The highest the Patriots been drafted in the first round in a very long time. They took this guy, and now he doesn't get to play. Dante Scarnecchia is the name because we hear Coach Mangini, who's going to be out here later, speak glowingly about him. The offensive line coaches never get love. But he's got a lot of work to do now because you have one less guy to deal with, and now, do we think they're not going to have another offensive line injury all year? Do we think there's going to be no one else on the, like, what's the margin of error? Your swing tackle leaves, your starting left tackle leaves, your draft pick's injured. It's a tough situation.
And they got no dominant running game, and they got no wide receiver outside that can put pressure on you. For me, if I'm playing New England, if I play them early, I'm going after Tom Brady. He's going to have to throw the ball outside, and then wide receiver's going to have to beat me because I am blitzing him. I am putting all the pressure on that offensive line to be able to make a bunch of adjustments.
And when you say going after him early, keep in mind, early, that first month of the season, he doesn't even have Edelman.
Yes.
So, like, you need Gronk in that first month to be an even more valuable receiving threat. He might have to stick in and block along with Dwayne Allen. Like, again, the sky's never falling in New England. I've learned that the hard way. But injuries matter, and talent matters, and who's outgoing and who's incoming matters.
All that being said, Patriots are still
13-3. I mean, of course.
there we go. It was a good but also not great night for Cam Newton. Friday against the Dolphins. Way to use your rig words, Jenna. 9-for-12, 89 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Panthers did get a boost from Christian McCaffrey, who ripped off a 92 yards on five carries, including a 71-yard touchdown run. Cam said afterwards, I know I left plays out there. I have to be better, and I have to take full responsibility and accountability for that. All right, CeCe, what should we expect from Cam Newton and the Panthers' offense this season?
I expect their offense to be explosive. Yeah, we saw in the running game there, they've run the ball well with Carolina football since they were an expansion franchise. That's one thing. They play good defense, and they run the football. But they've added Norv Turner. So you have to realize that Cam has been very comfortable with Mike Shula as the offensive coordinator. And now having a new voice in his ear, a new philosophy, they're working on trying to change some things from Cam. So, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see some type of growing pains. I believe that this wide receiving core probably is as explosive and has more diversification from a talent standpoint, tight end, the wide receiver, to running back, than any roster Cam's been on. So I expect this to be one of Cam's best seasons. But this is also a guy that has been MVP. So when you've been MVP, like, I expect him to play at that level. I think Cam is going to win another MVP throughout his career.
Wow.
Yes, I believe he has that type of talent. I like the talent around him. Curtis Samuel, he becomes very, very important in his second year after a disappointing rookie season. And I'm very excited with the first pick in the draft,
DJ Moore.
He looks like he's going to have a good NFL career, and I believe he's going to help Cam in this new adjustment to a Norv Turner type offense.
One of the reasons that I get so frustrated at times when people just look at Cam's raw passing numbers is because it disregards how big of an impact he has on the running game. Because I agree with Chris that the Panthers are going to potentially be a very dangerous running team. But their running back core is Christian McCaffrey, who is not a guy you look at all as an every down back, the 71-yard run notwithstanding, and C.J. Anderson, who Denver let go for nothing.
And
Cam Newton.
Yes.
Cam's the only quarterback in the league that if you said your running backs are Christian McCaffrey and C.J. Anderson, you're going to have a great running game, that you would believe it. And while I also think D.J. Moore is a very good addition, and I liked it, I liked that pick, the Panthers, they're kind of the bizarro Cowboys as far as their success rate on first-round picks over the last few years. Like, first and second-round picks, they've spent premium picks on Kelvin Benjamin, Coney Ealy, first, second-round picks. They're both on different teams now. Shaq Thompson, he's a good player, but then Devin Funchess in the second round, okay. Like, probably not the production you would like. 2 years ago, Vernon Butler was the first-round pick. I had to look up, has he been injured? What's his story? And then the corner Bradbury, who's been a good player for him, and then McCaffrey, who I think is a quality player, but nowhere near the quality you expected to get at the eighth overall pick. Like, the Panthers keep spending picks trying to get weapons for Cam, and they seem to be picking the wrong players.
Yeah, I think when Norv Turner is hired, people will talk about, well, what kind of impact will he have on Cam? I believe Christian McCaffrey, he'll have as big an impact, okay, because Norv loves to run the football and is very creative in the running game. How effective, as we could see in the preseason game against Miami? Last year, Christian McCaffrey didn't have more than 66 yards rushing,
right,
in a game. I mean, let alone a big run like this. So you can already see the effect of Norv Turner, and I believe that McCaffrey will benefit and Cam Newton will benefit.
What do you want to see Cam do differently this year besides his press conferences that he wasn't doing last year?
The same thing everyone asks for Cam is to be more accurate with the football, to not throw your back foot as often.
Is that something you can come out and say, this year I'm going to be more accurate?
Well, I mean, you can't just make the decision. You have to put in the work in the offseason on your fundamentals, on your footwork, on the things that Cam has not done consistently throughout his career. The thing is this with Cam, and we grade, there's a bit of a Dwight Howard grade with Cam Newton, which is we grade you on a curve based on what your physical abilities say you should be able to do. Cam overall has been a really good player in this league, but we look at the fact that, well, physically, you should be the most dominant quarterback in the league. Like, you can throw the ball 60 yards in the air, you run a 4-4, you're big and strong, like all those things. And some, far too often in his career, Chris can speak to this better than me, he's fallen back on those physical gifts rather than getting down to the fundamentals of it. But that's the one thing he's got to improve on to me, is overall accuracy of the football, which comes from if he's throwing off the right foot, is he throwing, falling backwards, things like that.
Yeah, my biggest issue with players like Cam, and I talked to people with Dez Bryant, because people are like, man, Chris Carter does not like Dez Bryant. Different players, for me, come into this league with different expectations that I have for them based on seeing how guys like them in the past have converted from college over to the pro. So Dwight Howard, he didn't play in college. So he was a tremendous high school player, but his body would tell us that he's going to be, based on his athleticism, he's going to be a tremendous player. He never did develop. Now, Cam, the reason why we have a problem with Cam is because he's like an expert marksman, where I have seen him hit a bullseye from 300 yards away. And they've been like, wow, he can do that. I bring him up to 50 yards, he can't even hit the target. So it's the consistency of what I've seen with him. How often can we see that? Because we have seen guys get better throwing the football. So I don't think that the expectations for Cam, they haven't been real. I believe they've been fair, too. He is that kind of talent.
I mean,
and I saw him when he got his scholarship offer from Urban Meyer. I was on the field, and, man, this kid, he can be one of the game's all-time greats. That's why I'm hard on Cam.
And Jenna, to answer your question another way, because I think you knew I was going to say accuracy, let me do a bigger picture answer. Avoid the truly awful games. Like, see, you mentioned it a few weeks ago. There's only Alex Smith and Tom Brady had more games than Cam with a quarterback rating better than 120. But I think only DeShone Kizer had more games than Cam of a quarterback rating sub 70. Like, we know he's going to have those great games. Last game he played, that playoff game, the duel against Drew Brees, he was great. It's the games once a month where it's like,
yeah,
Cam had three interceptions, threw for 110 yards. And you're like, how the hell does that happen?
Those are the
games he's got to eliminate. And then if he just has average games plus the great games, he's the guy you want him to be.
All right, we've got to take a break. Coming up, is there a rookie quarterback flying under the radar?
Ooh.
Eric Mangini will be here to talk about that next. Stump First Things First. Back here on First Things First, former NFL head coach Eric Mangini is here. Hey, Coach, how was your weekend?
It was fantastic. Thank
you. Nice.
Great.
Mine was fantastic. Great. It was hot, but it was great to be back here. Got a lot of football to talk about.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. So much for Josh Allen taking some time to learn NFL football.
Wasn't it raining this weekend?
They were both out of town.
We were both out of town.
In the same city, but they didn't meet up. Thank God.
Let's talk about it. I was so I texted at like 11. Bill's starting quarterback AJ McCarron fractured his collarbone on Friday. Next man up, Josh Allen or CC's guy Nate Peterman. The good news, Allen looked pretty good. 9-13, 60 yards and a touchdown. The bad news, Nate Peterman. Allen will have to hold off CC's just absolute favorite player if he wants to start the Bills opener. So, Coach, how much of a challenge would it be now for the Buffalo Bills starting Josh Allen week one, if that's the route they're going
to
go?
Well, it's challenging to start any rookie week one and to try to get used to the speed. So they're going through this process now with the preseason games where that's one level up from practice. But when you actually get into those games, it's a totally different speed. And the first game of the season, to me, is one of the hardest because you don't know what you're going to get from your opponent. They've had all offseason to try new things. They haven't showed in the preseason. So you're putting a rookie in there who's seeing a variety of coverages, but it's not only the coverages that you have prepared them for, but it's other things. It's new blitzes, so that there's volumes of stuff that goes into that first game. Brian Daboll, who's the offensive coordinator, I've known for years. He was my offensive coordinator in Cleveland. We worked together in New England. I think he's very good. I think he is he's going to have him extremely well prepared, and he's going to put him in a position to be as successful as possible. So to me, that gives him the best chance to have a quick start.
Josh Rosen actually had some really interesting quotes that I think can be applicable here this morning. Peter King's new, his version, what used to be Monday Morning Quarterback, but he's now with different network, and he wrote a column today where he talked to Josh Rosen. And Rosen talked about how in college he got to the line. He'd say, is this cover two? I think it's cover two. They'd snap the ball. He'd be like, oh, it's cover three? Make the throw. And then he talked about how drastically different it is now, even in just preseason games. He's like, I get to the line. I have to make checks. I have to potentially audible. They're showing me one defense. And then all of a sudden I realize they're showing me that because they want me to think when it's that. He explains it how it is. It's not quite going from English to Mandarin, but it's close, like in how different that is. And Josh Rosen went to big-time school, playing big-time programs with big-time, million-dollar-a-year defensive coordinators at other Pac-12 schools. This is where Josh Allen's at a serious deficit. Even if you believe in the talent, even if you believe of all the quarterbacks, he has the highest potential, he's also the one I think most everyone agreed was the least ready to start right now. The guy who struggled the most against any type of competition while in college. The guy who relied the most on athleticism and arm talent rather than schematic advantage at college. And now all of a sudden he could be the first quarterback of this class to start? Like, that's, none of that sounds good to me. None of that sounds, fair is not a word in the NFL, but fair for what his long-term success is, that, okay, you were the least prepared, you were the rawest, you were the biggest project. Go start week one of the season.
But your other option is a guy who struggled last year, having seen defenses, having practiced and played, and knowing the Buffalo Bills.
I think the biggest problem is his overall arm strength, because when you watch the highlights and you watch him throw the football, you're like, wow, this kid can be special. But, Nick, you mentioned all the things that young quarterbacks struggle with. Now, I'm going to point out something. He does have a big, big arm. You talked about all the play recognition, the defense recognition. I want to look right over Nick's shoulder. You see that? You see that windup that Josh has? You see how far that ball is away from his ear? It takes a long time to be able to do that. So, even if he doesn't know what the coverage is. And once he does know, okay, I'm going to throw to this guy, man, he's got that big windup that you're going to see. And it gives DBs, it gives defensive coordinators an opportunity to be able to pounce on wherever that ball is going to go. So, man, Brian Daboll, he's got his work cut out for him because the organization, they love this kid. I talked to the head coach in Sean McDermott. He loves him. I talked to the quarterback coach. They love him, and they think that he's going to be very, very good. But that big windup and recognizing where that ball is going to go, that is going to be a problem for at least the first part of his rookie year, Coach.
And one of the things that I've always liked about Brian as a coordinator and as a coach is he would spend a lot of time trying to figure out what you do well and making sure that that game plan represents what gives you the best chance to be successful. And he understands what it's like to have a rookie quarterback. He understands the learning that goes into that. So I trust that he'll put him in a position to be as successful as it can. Now, the other edge that Brian has is he started on defense. So he understands coverages. He understands how to teach coverages. And I think that's going to help Josh. There's a lot of offensive coaches that have only coached offense. So even though they understand coverages to a degree, it's different. So I like that aspect, too.
He also, listen, Josh Allen is going to be a long term. It's not going to be fair to judge him based on week one, probably not even fair to judge him based on year one. But he is something of a Rorschach test for how you're going to judge football players coming out of college. Because all the analytics said, this guy's not worth a top 100 pick, much less a top 10 pick. And I don't want to say all, but the vast majority of just eye test for size, weight, arm strength. Like, okay, this guy could be a franchise quarterback. My concern is, and it's not fair to just do apples to apples like this, I know another guy that went to a small school that was overdrafted in my eyes in the first round because of his size, arm strength, things like that. His name is Paxton Lynch. And in a couple weeks, he's probably about to get cut because he had all the tangibles, as far as measurables, metrics, but you looked at his production in college, said he wasn't that accurate. He wasn't that good. Like, if he's that good, why wasn't he better? And those guys, there's not a long list of those guys that were inaccurate, unproductive in college that turned it on in the pros.
Nick, I disagree with you as far as this being a test on the big, strong quarterback. Man, since I've been associated with the league, and that's a long time, over 30 years, they're going to draft a guy. If the guy can hum it, if he can throw it, if he's got arm talent, the NFL is going to draft him. Look at Blake Bortles. He came from UCF. A little smaller as far as competition. Big, strong guy at the combine. He passed the test. What's the difference between Josh Allen and Blake Bortles?
But I guess that's kind of my point. Is like Blake Bortles has been a disaster.
They're always going to be drafted. I wouldn't say he's been a disaster.
Oh, he's been a disappointment.
Because there have been guys who couldn't play at all.
Sure.
And what analytics are you talking about? Because if there were any analytics that could accurately predict the success of a quarterback, whoever produced that would be a billionaire because everybody would want it. So we can say analytics. You've got to draft traits. You've got to draft with the idea of, okay, he went to that school. So he's probably not as developed as those other quarterbacks are.
Yes.
So his ceiling is higher. Sometimes you get these quarterbacks from big colleges. They've got a huge advantage, but they don't have much growth because they've already had a high level of coaching.
And I'm not acting like these are my analytics that I created, the algorithms or the formulas. But what I will tell you is I have not seen anyone that's been able to produce something that will say this guy will hit. But they have shown relatively well over history being able to put in what your college production was at this position and say whether you won't hit. Like, does that make sense as far as...
No, I'd love to see that.
Okay, well, so I can putting in what your accuracy numbers were, what your numbers were against your best competition, it does not let you know this guy's going to make it. But it can cross a few guys off the list. Hackenberg's one of those guys. He was one of... Now, we don't know yet with him, but one of the reasons that there was a big split on this player was because all those numbers tests said there's never been a successful NFL quarterback with this college resume. Now, there's always a first, but there's never been one with this college resume, and now he might have to start week one.
Why not sit him and let him just watch a little bit? Why throw him right in?
Because we saw Peterman. Because he was going
Peterman had a decent preseason. He can still play quarterback. I mean, he's probably a little more experienced than Josh Allen has.
The only thing stopped Peterman from throwing six interceptions was they pulled him out.
I get that. But look, we've all had a bad day. He had a little bit worse day than some do, but that doesn't mean you can't grow. So look, it was bad. Yeah. It was bad.
You have
the potential to grow.
It's hard to do number two on yourself and smell good. Okay.
Well, I mean, Cleveland went 0-16, and they've got the same crew in there. They're hoping for growth.
Jackson still has a job.
No, like they sent that diaper off to Green Bay to Deshaun Kaiser. That's what happens. All right, baby powder won't cure that.
Coach, stick around. Coming up, why might Dak not have to be lights out for the Cowboys to win the NFC East? That answer. First things first. How did the Cowboys do this weekend? Well, it depends on who you ask. Dak Prescott won a respectable 10 for 15 with 86 yards and a touchdown in his three possessions. Their defense was on point, shutting out the Bengals in the first half. Bit of bad news for the boys, though. All-pro guard Zach Martin forced to leave with a knee injury. But according to reports, he did avoid significant damage. All right, Coach, let's focus on the defense first. How good do the Cowboys need their defense to be if they're going to compete this year?
I think their defense is going to have to be really good. I think the defense, though, does have the advantage of the fact that the offense is going to eat up so much time. They're going to have the opportunity, I think, in most games to be able to come out, be fresh. I would imagine there'll be sustained
now,
drives.
Now, from a philosophy standpoint, I didn't mean to cut you off, but just explain to us Why, if you were coaching a defense, why are these defenses that have offenses that run the ball, why is it easier or why do they play just from a not just eating up time? Why do they typically play less time on the field?
Well, whenever you have a complementary system and you can offensively, you can chew up time, you can give the defense a chance to go to the sidelines, sit down with the coaches, go through the adjustments, go through the pictures. To me, that's a huge advantage because now, and you also have the edge of getting your guys fresh for the next series. It's really difficult when you're in a run and shoot offense or with a coordinator or head coach who wants to just keep pushing the ball, pushing the ball, pushing the ball, and then it's three and out, your defense is back out. Like any group, it wears down. And the later in the game, it becomes a real problem.
We saw, one of the reasons New Orleans had really bad defense for a long time is there's a lot of reasons. Just coaching, talent, overall players. But another one of the reasons was, as great as he is, Drew Brees and the offense, if you're going to throw the ball as often as the Saints had basically every year until last year, there's going to be a lot of instances where by the time they've sat down on the bench, it's 3rd and 10 and there's another incompletion. They're back out there, right? Like, because of that philosophy. It is not a coincidence that last year, the year that New Orleans had more of a dedicated running attack with Ingram and Kamara, that was also the year, that Saints defense isn't so bad. Now, part of that was the defensive rookie of the year out of Ohio State, Marshawn Lattimore. Mm-hmm. And part of it was talent, but also it was they didn't have to defend as much. Like, that's the biggest thing the Cowboys have going for them or had going for them defensively, I would argue, in the past. And now what they have, I think, is some legitimate front seven talent. Because you know DeMarcus Lawrence, they believe in him at 14 sacks last year, the franchise tag him. They spent a first-round pick on Taco Charlton a year ago. They expect more from him. He had a good flash play this preseason game. Randy Gregory, they were without him for a year. He'll be back. Mm-hmm. David Irving, he's going to miss the first month of the season, but he'll be there. Jalen Smith, who was a top-5 talent, suffered a devastating knee injury that turned into a foot injury. He looked as close to the Notre Dame Jalen Smith that I'd seen this past weekend. So all of a sudden there's talent plus the benefit of only playing those 28 minutes.
I think the one thing Coach is saying is very, very important is that this organization, that the veteran offense and defensive coordinators, that they are married to each other. That when they're putting in game plans and when they're trying to execute with inside the game, that they understand who's on the other side. So Marinelli, when he's sitting over there and he's looking at the Polaroids and they're looking at the computers and they're trying to make adjustments, they realize that, man, I need this defense. And Scott Linehan, I need them to stay on the – I need this offense to stay on the field. I need them to be able to grind it out. The best teams that I ever played on, our biggest problem, when Brian Billick used to say this, was he used to tell defense coordinator, I don't know when we're going to score. In 1998, we'd be like, I don't know. How long is the play? How long is the drive going to be? Like, when is Moss going to just act up? Might be 3 plays, might be 8 plays. But typically, when you can't predict, it's not an advantage to that defense that, wow, yeah, they are a quick strike team. Or, yeah, they're in a good offensive team. But is it married to the defense? And in Dallas, Jenna, they do have that. And Scott Linehan, he will be married to that defense with Marad Marinelli. So this organization, as they go forward and try to win games, they have to be able to do it together.
This is interesting, too. This is another team that overhauled the coaching staff. So they kept the coordinators in place, but Eberflus, he's now in Indianapolis. He's their defensive coordinator. I think they moved on from the D-line coach to the DB coach. So there's going to be some learning from that group to try to get to a cohesive package. And then how does the scheme change? What's the evolution of this defense from Marinelli's standpoint? Typically, it's been a cover two with a little bit of zone blitz mixed in, and every now and then there's some man-to-man. Is it going to evolve, or are they just going to stay with that core and keep trying to push that forward?
So the one thing we've talked about all preseason is that they're only really lacking in one area, the Dallas Cowboys, and that's the receiving core. Is the defense good enough that they may not have to worry so much about that receiving core? I mean, is it good enough to no?
No. Well, I mean, we got to see how well the secondary plays, and I'm not totally sold on the secondary at this point. Now, a secondary is helped substantially by good pass rush, but their ability to just line up and play man-to-man coverage if they have to is going to be interesting to see. And then, look, Sean Lee, when he's out, they're not very good. When he's in, they're pretty good. He needs to stay healthy because he makes that go.
Yeah, I think also Jalen Smith playing better. So if they would lose a Sean Lee, they could slide Jalen over and he could be that linebacker that could play three downs for them.
No, I from a skill perspective, I just wonder where Jalen is from a leadership perspective. I think Sean gives a lot of leadership and he gets everybody lined up, which when he's out of the lineup, you see the communication goes down dramatically and the production goes down dramatically.
I have a question for you. At this late stage, we know Dez is not on a team. If you're Dallas, would you take Dez for like the minimum, above the minimum?
No. I think once they got divorced and I think they need to stay divorced and everybody needs to go and find a new partner, I don't think they can go back at this point.
But every once in a while, you like to drive back over there because you kind of know the temperature of the cookies.
Yeah, but you, yeah.
Black cookies?
Okay.
We're good. All right. We'll see you a little bit later in the show just to talk cookies and other baking situations.
Speaking of, think about it, Coach.
The Food Network.
What?
The Food Network.
Speaking of Dez Bryant, did he blow his chance with the Browns? That's next on First Things First. Moving on to Dez Bryant. When we left here on Friday, it seemed like just a matter of time before Dez was officially a Cleveland Brown. But then Saturday and Sunday happened, and now not so much. Head coach Hugh Jackson says Josh Gordon's return wouldn't rule out signing Dez, but it's being reported that Dez is no longer a priority for the team. So, CC, are you surprised the Browns aren't making Dez a priority now that they have Josh back?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, it's the way this league is, man. It's just amazing if you make the wrong decision or if you just tell a team, hey, you know something, I just want to think about it. Now, I don't know how much intel Dez had of Josh's situation. When I was going to Cleveland, that would have been one of the main things besides what kind of offense y'all running, how y'all trying to utilize me. Man, what's the deal with Josh Gordon?
And one of the reasons isn't just, oh, it's a wide receiver. What position does Josh Gordon play?
X receiver.
What's the only position Dez Bryant's ever played?
The only one we have seen him play in the league has been X receiver. That's receiver to the boundary. And it's hard because they got a couple other young receivers. And if they keep both of these veteran receivers, like, you really hurt the growth of Antonio Callaway. And you only got one football. You mentioned they got three running backs. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to be a team that can throw the ball and run the ball. But, man, you can't. It's hard to have Landry, Dez Bryant, and Josh on the same roster because I don't know if you have enough speed because the carryover between Josh and Dez, they do a lot of the same stuff.
And Josh does them better. Like, Josh Flatley does him better. He's bigger than Dez Bryant, I think he's an inch taller. They're about the same build. He's faster than Dez Bryant. He's done it. He's produced at similar levels in much smaller sample sizes with far inferior quarterbacks. Like, I was more taken aback than I think than you, Chris, or Coach Mangini when we talked Friday. Jenna, you and I both, that Dez didn't come to an agreement Thursday. And now that we know Josh Gordon was in the Browns facility Saturday.
Yes.
I don't think it's far-fetched to say they got word Thursday that Josh is completing his program. And I don't think it's far-fetched to think that maybe they were going to make Dez Bryant an offer. And maybe they, as you know, you got John Dorsey in one room, Hugh Jackson in another room, someone's talking to Josh Gordon's people, and all of a sudden, this is the conversation they have with Dez and his people. You know what? Let's break for today. Let's all think about, you know, our meeting today. Let's meet back in the morning. And then they get together like, hey, Josh going to be here in 24 hours. Do we need to make this guy an offer?
And you have to consider the Browns are only on the hook for $800,000 paying Josh this year. Now, I don't know how much Dez was going to make. Josh is familiar with the offense. He's a better fit for Jarvis Landry because his overall speed and being a deep threat that Dez isn't. But when you look at that price tag, it's a hard spot that Dez is in that we didn't see.
So let's talk about Dez Bryant now, because last week he insinuated that the Browns were one of a number of teams that he's going to go work out for. We don't seem to think or believe that there are any other teams. We haven't heard about this. You have to wonder if that 3-year, $21 million deal the Ravens had offered him a few months back might have been the thing he should have done to get himself back in, because it doesn't seem like he has many other options. Where does Dez Bryant go from here, CeCe?
I still think Dez is in a better position than signing with Baltimore. The reason why, Baltimore is going to struggle throwing the ball. Baltimore's trying to break in a rookie quarterback in Lamar Jackson. Flacco potentially is on his last year there. And they have Crabtree, so the skill set, there's a lot of carryover with two possession wide receiver. So I still think that someone could get injured. Dez could still end up on the right team. And I believe that Cleveland still has Dez on their board if something happens to Josh, or if they get another guy injured during the season. So I wish he was with a team now, because I'd like to see him play a couple preseason games inside this new organization. And I know it's challenging. It's challenging for skilled guys to be able to pick up a system. When you've been running one system predominantly throughout your career and trying to learn a system in a couple weeks to get ready for a game, that part I'm concerned about with Dez.
Today is August 20th.
Indeed.
The season starts September 16th. Or September 6th, pardon me, I misstated it. Is Dez Bryant on a roster September 6th? Jenna Wolf asked this question 4 months ago, and you and I both said it's crazy to even ask. Like, the players this talented, even with baggage, are not unemployed at the beginning of a season. I now think it is more likely than not that this is the first time I believe this. I'd have lost this bet to you a week ago. I now think it's more likely than not that when the NFL season kicks off, Eagles, Falcons, September 6th, that Dez Bryant's still a free agent. And that is shocking to me, but we're running out of days, and he's running out of teams.
I told you guys long before, don't worry about it. We're going through free agency. Don't be concerned. But Dez Bryant has to be concerned. And if you even go back to some of the intel stuff that you didn't like, Nick, I'm sure other teams, when they're looking back at it, Coach Mangini didn't like it. The Browns general manager said he tried to call him. He said he couldn't get a return phone
right.
call. So, wow, what kind of guy doesn't have a job and doesn't return Dorsey's phone call? So other teams, they have that intel also. And to me, it's just not good for Dez this late and to not be on a team.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.